This weekend marks the end of a long, turbulent year for the people of Ferguson, Missouri. Since the killing of Michael Brown, the protests locally and around the nation, the events in Ferguson began a year of soul-searching on issues of criminal justice, police brutality, and race relations in America.
It's an emotional roller coaster for Michael Brown's parents.
We would like the protesters to stop the violence. We certainly don't want to have any violence.
We're just asking people to be peaceful and that we are actively working to resolve this situation.
And they continue to throw tear gas around me to where I could not leave.
Deep in my heart.
As Americans, we've got to use this moment to seek out our shared humanity that's been laid bare by this moment.
The federal government immediately began to second-guess local politicians and law enforcement officials in Ferguson. There was a shakeup in the Ferguson Police Department, a Justice Department report that made public a culture of racism and intolerance in the Ferguson Police Department. Then U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder called for change earlier this year.
Now that our investigation has reached its conclusion, it is time. It is time for Ferguson's leaders to take immediate, wholesale, and structural corrective action.
Officials in Ferguson responded with actions on the ground and in some cases expressed impatience with the federal government's intervention into local matters. In response to the Justice Department's report on Ferguson's law enforcement system, Mayor James Knowles told the New York Times that the Justice Department had created a climate of fear, scaring police from doing their job. Police are scared to pull people over because they're going to be called a racist, the mayor said. It's been a tough year for Mayor James Knowles. Residents who believe the mayor has been too supportive of the police issued a petition for his ouster, but James Knowles is still in office, and he says he's doing his best to bridge the divide between residents, police, and local leaders.
You know, in Ferguson, and I think we've seen over the past year, it's become more, especially in the media, than just the city of Ferguson. It's really become a symbol for a number of places, a number of things, and trying to deal with things that are oftentimes outside of the control of me as mayor or even our local city government, it's been very challenging.
Have people had to learn what the limits of mayoral power are in a place like Ferguson over the last year?
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of misconceptions that this is a full-time job. It's not. I have a full-time job. You know, being mayor of Ferguson pays about $300 a month after taxes. You know, so I think many people just assume that, you know, the mayor of Ferguson has executive authority, which I don't. I'm the leader of the council. I preside over the meetings. You know, I sign bills into law, but I can't veto bills, can't give direction to city staff members. So, yeah, it's been a learning hurdle for a number of people.
What has changed in the last year, and how much has the city council been involved in those changes?
Well, the city council, as early as last August, really started to take a proactive role into looking at ourselves, what we do as a community, what we do as a city government, what's working, what isn't, engaging residents, especially residents who are crying out to be heard, and finding out how we can deal with the issues that they brought to light. And we started making those reforms as a council through ordinances, through policy changes right away last year. And that's something that we've continued throughout the past year. You know, the city charter does limit what we can do, but at the same time, the city council has focused on, we really walked that line a little bit with the city charter to ensure that these reforms and these policies were put into place to address the issues that have come up since last August.
Has there been a sufficient level of reform in the Ferguson Police Department, in your view?
I think so. I mean, I think they're all in the right direction. Again, to change that's happening in the police department, we started several months ago, 6 months ago, engaged some consultants to help us reorganize the police department in a manner in which would create a more community-oriented policing environment, a more community-oriented policing strategy. We're already seeing a tremendous response from our residents who are saying that they do like what they're seeing. They do like the direction we're seeing. And we'll continue to engage the residents to find out what are the things they would like to see happen, both with our police department and our city government.
Has the Department of Justice's investigation and its findings about law enforcement in Ferguson and some of the very alarming conclusions about the culture of, I guess it's hard to describe, but certainly a culture of intolerance in the police department. Has that been helpful? Has that been illuminating for the people of Ferguson? Has it helped to direct the course of change, or has it gotten in the way?
I mean, I think it's cut both ways, I think, for some residents. I think for some residents, it's been very frustrating. You know, when we talk about many of the issues that even the Justice Department talked about, these are things that we've been talking to our residents about since we started engaging the community back in August. And many of the reforms that even the Justice Department suggested, the city of Ferguson was actually already underway with making some of those reforms. So to some extent, it did kind of tear back open a wound, which we were already trying to be in the process of healing. But, you know, we've been focused from day one on there was about 12 pages at the end discussing which ways we can move forward as a community, what ways we can better orient the police department, be more effective, be more community oriented, be more fair, help with these divisions in our community. We focused on making those reforms both before that report and after, and we're going to continue to focus on that because ultimately we think we'll have both a better police department, better city services, and a better city after we make those reforms.
Has the recall effort against you toughened you? Has your year in the mayor's office caused self-reflection on your part? And do you leave civic office feeling, man, that was a huge mistake. I'll never do anything like that again.
Well, I'm not leaving office. They didn't recall me. So they tried twice, and you know they may try again. I've served going on 11 years in public service since I was 25 years old as a city councilman and a mayor. I've given a great deal of my time and effort to this community, which I grew up in, lived in 35 years. And not for a moment would I have abdicated that responsibility or that service to someone else. It has been tough on me. It's been a burden that I bear willingly. My family does too. My parents who live in the community, they've been victims of a great deal, both vandalism to their homes and identity theft, as well as myself and my wife. Never once has any member of my family or myself thought about leaving or that this wasn't worth it.
James Knowles, mayor of Ferguson, Missouri, thanks so much.
You're very welcome.
All this month, we will be looking at Americans who have decided to enter political life, people who, for one reason or another, have been motivated to run for elective office for the first time. You might say that these people represent the simplest treasure of democracy, that if a person believes they can help their community, they can take a step into public life, run for office, and try and change things. Ferguson City Councilman Wesley Bell is such a person. After many years as an activist, he decided to run after Michael Brown's death, believing that his voice needed to be heard in Ferguson. Councilman Bell says he's learned a lot and quickly. For instance, he told us that he's discovered that symbolism and diversity in politics need to be backed up with results.
Obviously, diversity is important. Our systems, be it our government entities or what have you, should be more reflective of our community. Having said that, that's not an excuse to compromise quality. You want to bring people in who have the community's best interest at heart. So diversity for the sake of diversity is not the point.
How accountable is law enforcement in Ferguson to the city council now in this new era?
That is something that myself, as well as other council members, but if you followed our election, that's one thing I ran on was community-oriented policing, which I don't think I've ever made a public statement without mentioning that because I think it's so important. And so I think with that emphasis, yeah, I think there is more accountability. And let's be clear, the overwhelming majority of our law enforcement officers do great work. They protect our streets. You know, of the millions of interactions with law enforcement and people in our community, you never hear about them because they're handled professionally. Having said that, there are examples of situations that aren't handled well, and just one is too much. So we do need to continue to address these issues. And I think there's no perfect system. Nothing man-made is going to be perfect. But a community-oriented approach where the police department is a part of the community and vice versa, it is the most effective method, not just in Ferguson, not just regionally, but nationally. Our law enforcement, we need to reemphasize community-oriented policing.
What's the toughest conversation you've had since you've been a councilman?
that's probably the thing that surprised me the most, is the things that you hear about yourself that aren't true. So I've heard that I'm apparently a protester. I've heard that I am with law enforcement. And I would say that I represent protesters. I represent anyone who's been disconnected and disenfranchised. But I also represent every hardworking officer who's sick of their name being drug in the mud because of the actions of a few. So, you know, again, no matter how much you get out, no matter how many doors you knock on, it's hard to reach everyone. And so we've been making such an emphasis to try and to reach out to all our citizens, who some of which traditionally have not been as involved. And so, you know, we've had town hall meetings, which I facilitated a few already myself. We did have a record turnout in Ferguson, particularly in my ward. We had the highest turnout in the history of my ward, actually, and my understanding is 2.5 times higher than the last record turnout. It's so important for everyone to get engaged and to get out and vote. And that's one thing that I think we're doing a better job with now, because we are getting out there and engaging more people and not conceding certain communities as we tend to do in our society.
Sounds simple, but in actual fact, as you've learned, it's not so simple.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. You can, no matter what you do, no matter how hard you work, there's going to be detractors, but that's okay. That's part of the job. You know, my whole thing is every day I wake up and say, what can I do to make this city better? And that's the way I'm going to proceed. If we get it right here in Ferguson, the world is going to take notice. So, you know, I've said before and I'll say again, I don't think there's anything I'm going to do more significant in my life than what I'm doing right now. And I say, let's embrace it. It's here. It's part of our city's history now. Let's embrace it.
Wesley Bell, thanks so much.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Wesley Bell is a city councilman in Ferguson, Missouri.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.